This is the Diamond Hogs Podcast with Mason Choate and Robert Stewart.
Welcome to the Diamond Hogs Podcast. I'm your host, Mason Choate, joined as always by Robert Stewart, and we also have Riley McFerrin with us on this first episode of our fifth season of the Diamond Hogs Podcast. That's right, the premier Razorback baseball podcast. Five seasons. We kind of started a trend, I guess. There's a lot of them now, but we're sticking to it. We had a lot of people reach out, as always, and that means a lot to us. We really appreciate it. Yes, we're doing it again. This year is going to look a little bit different. But before we get into that, Robert, I'm sure the people want to hear from you, because while I cover the Razorbacks and Riley covers the Razorbacks, you have been in Washington, D.C., and nobody has heard from you for a long time. So how are you?
Yeah, I've gone dark. I'm still without Twitter X, whatever you want to call it now, because Elon Musk and his support team have decided they don't want to let me back in. That's okay. I'm living a pretty good life in DC right now. Definitely eager for baseball to get going again. But had a great year of baseball myself. Summer of baseball after the Hogs wrapped up last year. Bunch of Nats games, went to go see Heston Kerstad in Baltimore a few times. Once Caden Wallace got traded from Kansas City to Washington, I went to Bowie, Maryland to see him and Matt Cronin pitch for the AA Harrisburg Senators. Baseball is good. Can't wait to get back to Arlington again this year. That'll be, I guess, the fourth time in 5 years that I'm doing that trip anyway. Life's good. Baseball is good. Can't wait to get back into the swing of things.
Well, for those of you who are maybe new to the show or catching up a little bit, my name is Mason Choate. I'm the publisher of Hogbeat.com. That is HAWGBEAT.com. I've been the host of this podcast for 5 years now. Robert has been my co-host. And now we have Riley McFerrin with us, who is the managing editor of Hogbeat.com. And he helped us out a little bit with the pod last year. And obviously, with Robert being in D.C., Riley being here covering the team with myself, it makes sense to have him on. So Riley, you want to say a few words? I know that you're just not really that interesting of a guy. You know, people kind of know you for the transfer
Oh
portal, and
man.
that's it, nothing else. What do you have to say, man?
That's all baseless and false. I'm pretty sure people come to watch at least Hogbeat Radio for me. That's what I was told week in and week out. They're
Maybe.
excited to hear my takes, and hopefully that trend continues. To kind of go off what Robert said, super excited for baseball season. You know, I kind of describe baseball season in Arkansas as a reprieval of sorts, especially the last two seasons. You know, football team struggling, basketball team don't know what is going on. You know, it's just crazy every year. And so, DVH, you can count on them to field a good team. You know, you can come into the ballpark, relax, and just have a good time. So I'm excited to talk about the show, talk about the Razorbacks, and let's get going.
Okay. Well, before we get into year 23 of the Dave Van Horn era at Arkansas, let's kind of talk about what the podcast is going to look like. In the past, what we've done is, you know, we've had two episodes a week, and normally when we go on trips to whether it be Arlington or the SEC tournament or wherever, we'll do maybe an episode per game. It's not going to look like that this year. We all have full-time jobs now. We're going to do one episode a week. Probably will vary the day. But what we're going to do is we're going to get you out a good podcast. It always has been a good podcast. It always has been a great product in our opinion. And that's why people want to listen. And so we're going to be doing that again. It's just going to be one episode a week, though. So for those of you who enjoy the two episodes a week, I'm sorry, but I think one episode a week will be good. We're just going to do the audio version, folks. We're not messing with YouTube. It's only going to be, you know, wherever you get your podcast on audio wise, just no YouTube. That's how we're going to do it this year. So for those of you who watch on YouTube, I apologize, but
I just heard a giant sigh that people won't be able to look at our faces anymore. I know they're
yeah.
really looking forward to that. So
yeah. That is one good thing, is that our faces won't be out there as much because we won't be doing it for YouTube, but there's still plenty of people who will be listening, and we appreciate all y'all. So other than that, I can't think. Is there anything else? I feel like maybe something else I should have been mentioning.
I mean, as far as people who will miss our faces go, I'm sure Mason will have like top-notch quality edits in the photo, edits that announce the new
Yes.
episodes every week. So
Yes.
you can count on those remain the same.
Yes. That does lead me to the last thing I wanted to say. And that was just that, for those of you who have been with us for a long time, in the past, Robert and I, it was a much better product. Let's admit that, because we were putting a lot more time, a lot more effort into it. It was a big part of our revenue at one point. It is no longer that, and so that's why we aren't able to put as much of the effort into it. But we still, again, want to get you guys a great product, and that's what we're going to do. So we're looking forward to it. Another season, year five. So let's get into it, guys. The 2025 Arkansas baseball team. Now, Robert, you don't know much about this team, so it's going to be exciting for you, along with the listeners, to kind of learn some stuff. I know you've been doing your own research, but the gist of this team is, it feels like, again, you can say this is probably the most talented roster that Dave Van Horn's ever had. I feel like you, for like the past 5 years, could probably try to make that argument. And it feels like, again, you can this year, especially on the pitching staff. The pitching staff this year, and we can probably start there, is going to be, again, one of the best in the country, if not the best in the country, Robert.
Yeah, I mean the whole narrative about this could be DVH's most talented team ever. I try to radiate positivity on this show. That's you hear that every year. I mean I don't want to diminish it. It's entirely possible that it could be true. You have to figure with him at the helm that they will field a competitive team yet again this year. But once again, it's going to come down to playing your best ball in June. So, definitely exciting to hear that. It's going to be a fun 4 months, however it goes. But yeah, the lots of D1 talent coming in from the transfer portal, it seems, as far as pitchers go. Zach Roots jumps out at you right away. Coming from a high profile school like ECU. And then I know there are a couple others, Oregon State guy, Aiden Jimenez, right? And then you're gonna have to help me out with the lefty from Ohio State. That's a lot of letters I haven't seen together like that before. All
Landon Beidelschies is
right,
what we're
there
going to
you
go
go.
with. Yep.
Beidelschies. Yeah. So as far as pitchers, the one thing that stands out to me is that you've got over 50% of your 2024 innings returning. And in a different light, that's 11 of 17 players who took the mound for Arkansas last year. So, the fact that six pitchers are gone and they accounted for almost half of your innings is pretty crazy. But gonna have to see a lot of new guys step up. You think about those 11, you're talking about some guys who threw barely any innings at all. Hunter Dietz, Dylan Carter, Tate McGuire, three that stand out right away. And the influx of new talent, sort of like Mason Molina last year. It's going to be a good mix. So I'm looking forward to what you guys can report from having seen them in scrimmages, because I know that was my thing 2 years ago when I was covering the team pretty heavily.
So you mentioned Zach Root, the transfer from East Carolina. Before we move on, I just got to throw it out there. We got to pick the next purple team that's going to knock Arkansas out in the regional. And East Carolina right now, I think, is the leading candidate. So just be thinking about that.
Yeah,
Now,
I would put their odds at pretty close to -500 for that honor.
Now you did mention, so, the saying, like, the DVH is the most talented team, all the hype around the team preseason every year. You think about the Braden Webb might be our best center fielder of all time quote from DVH. That wasn't an exact quote, but didn't end up happening, right? I'm pretty sure, no offense to the guy, he's selling insurance now. So the thing is, though, with this team, I think that maybe you, if you're a fan, and I'm going to bring you in here, Riley, so get ready. Is that DVH talked at the end of last year when they lost in the Fayetteville Regional, and it was just like, oh my gosh, how is this happening again? He basically was like, yeah, I really think that we're going to have to change the way that we recruit and the type of player that we recruit. And you could see with these guys that they landed, especially in the transfer portal. It was almost for a little bit there, Riley, it felt like it was like positionless recruiting. Let's just go get the best guys possible or the most athletic guys possible. So from your perspective, and from my perspective, it seems like they did that. Kind of talk us through that.
Yeah, I mean, just before I kind of get into it, I am so excited to fire up that first, Arkansas baseball game thread. And one of the first posts I'm going to see is fire Nate Thompson.
Every
I just
time.
can't wait. I mean, every
Every
single time,
time.
never fails. It's going to happen. But you're right. I mean, DVH and the baseball team, they went into this offseason kind of planning to rework things. A lot of people, and really, I mean, the entire country in baseball is like this. It's power, power, power. That's all everybody wants to see. DVH, he's not, he doesn't really go with that vibe. He likes to do his small ball, likes to play the bases, and he kind of talked about getting more athletic. I feel like we've seen that with some of the pickups. We've already mentioned Charles Davalon. He's a center fielder, fast, kind of brings that energy. Looks like he, could potentially be that leadoff guy. And they've got some other names in there that are going to steal some bases, really work the base paths. But there's still going to be power in there. I mean, you've got a guy like Vejiva Aloy coming back. He's gonna rake Ryder Helfrich. I mean, I think he was tied for the lead in Cape Cod over the summer in home runs. I think maybe 11. And then you've got other guys. Nolan Souza. How is he gonna make that sophomore jump? Could he be another power bat? You've got a good mix. I think. You're going to have that power. You're going to be, running the bases. I think Arkansas, more so than last year, will be more versatile. And so if they find themselves in a battle with a true ace, they can kind of figure out how to win the game. And I think that's key. One of the big things DVH has complained about is bunting, and I think fans, I mean, how many times have we seen Arkansas try to lay down a bunt and they just can't get it down? So, and that's something they've worked on. I don't know. I think the offense will be more versatile and it'll be better than last year.
A quick note about bunting, if I can. I read Mason's story about Logan Maxwell the other day, and we'll get more into this when we talk about the outfield and how that shapes out. But one interesting thing I noticed from my browsing of the 2023 regional scorebook sheets here, Logan Maxwell laid down two sac bunts in the regional final against Arkansas, and they ended up creating five runs in those two innings in a 12-4 decision that sent TCU to the Supers.
Wow. Okay, so I completely botched that in my story then, because at the end I just put a note of like he was 0 for 2 in that regional.
He was 0 for 2, but there were two key sack bunts in there, yes.
Yeah. Well, I should have looked into it like you did. That's why you're a great journalist, Robert. So this is an interesting team that has a lot of new faces, but at the same time, you're returning some of your key pieces. We mentioned Aloy. You talk about him. What kind of he hasn't had as many preseason honors as you would think he would have, but second team All SEC last year. And you mentioned how his summer was. He's gonna be a big part of the lineup. Souza, another one who's probably gonna be the starter at second base, which was interesting because they brought in Camden or Cam Kozel from Vanderbilt. I'm still kind of confused about that. Like, where's Cam Kozel at?
Yeah,
I don't
I'm not sure what happened there. I mean, that was kind of one of the later pickups in the portal, and it was a big pickup. I mean, he hit nearly 300, I think like 287 at Vanderbilt, proven SEC bat. And I kind of thought like, okay, you have Nolan Souza returning, maybe that's just a good battle. Maybe they don't think Souza can make that jump. Or maybe it was a mixture of they didn't know what Brent Iredale was going to do, and maybe Souza could play at third base. I don't know. Either way, Cam Kozel has been, I never want to label somebody as disappointing, especially early. The season hasn't even begun yet, and they're just practicing. So, and I know fans may look at his stat lines in the fall and the spring and might think that, but I mean, the dude is a proven hitter. Who knows? Maybe he can work his way into the lineup at some point.
It's just been a situation where like we just haven't seen it from him yet, but again, we haven't. It's only really been scrimmages. I want to say that maybe he dealt with a little bit of an injury in the fall. I could be wrong about that. But looking at his fall stats from what the media compiled, some local media, 34 at bats, 7 hits, that's hitting a little over 200. So just he's still trying to figure it out, and it's been kind of clear that Souza is your starting second baseman, a guy that DVH loves, always says that he could play tight end or linebacker, just a big guy that's really athletic. He's going to be up there, if not leading the team in stolen bases. Speaking of which, do y'all know who led the team in stolen bases last year?
I
You
do.
probably do.
Yeah, no, I was looking into this in compiling stats and seeing all some of these transfers with double digit stolen bases. The answer would be Vahiva Aloy with seven.
He was a perfect 7 for 7. Looks like only three other attempted seven. That was Holt, Peyton Holt. He went 6 for 7. Kendall Diggs 4 for 7. And then Will Edmondson, 6 for 7. Okay. Will Edmondson. A blast from the past, Will Edmondson, that guy.
Yeah, he was a speedster.
By the way, another blast from the past. You were talking about bunts earlier, Riley. I needed to mention Zach Gregory. We can't talk about bunting without Zach Gregory on this podcast. So shout
Why do you
out,
like him?
Gregory. Shout out, Gregory. Miss him.
That actually brings me or reminds me of a question I was going to ask, and maybe it's too early to figure this out, but at what point do you determine your Moneyball guy? Like, when does that happen?
Well, I'm going to make it clear to everybody listening to this podcast right now, I'm not going to post on Twitter probably at all. If I do, it's going to be a little bit on my personal, but follow the Arkansas Rivals Twitter. It's at Arkansas Rivals. If you want to follow my content and everything that I'm going to be doing, I still post on there daily. But I'm not posting on my personal like I have in the past, just not subjecting myself to that anymore. So as far as the Moneyball guy goes, the reason I say that is because I always post on my Twitter when he gets on base. Not going to be doing that anymore. But we can still pick a Moneyball guy. I have not decided. We got to see. I got to see more because they're still trying to figure a lot of this stuff out. So let's get into it here. Before there's just so much to talk about, so we can't get into it yet. Nate Thompson no longer coaching third base. I feel like we need to talk about that. It's going to be Bobby Wernes at third base and Hudson Polk at first base.
Hudson Polk, is he a GA? Is that what his role is?
I don't. He must be. He's not like an official full-time assistant, that's for sure.
Gotcha.
Let me see if they have his title on here. He's not on the support. Oh, he says student assistant coach. So he'll be coaching first base, Bobby Wernes at third, and Nate Thompson will be in the dugout, I believe doing some sort of analytical type thing. Because they can have the iPads in the dugouts now. Is that what it is?
That would not surprise me. I mean, during scrimmages that I used to go to, Nate was always working the iPad with TrackMan metrics and things of that nature.
Okay, Sam Pittman.
Yeah, that was a Pittman comment, wasn't it?
Which, by the way, he like completely removed that from his vocabulary, by the
How
way,
about that?
Robert.
Very impressive.
Hey,
Yeah.
that is impressive, man. Transcribing him was always you're due for about five things of that nature in any given press conference. So good for Sam.
Yeah. Okay. So I needed to mention that. That was one thing that I wanted to get out of the way. We talked about episodes, general info, changes to the schedule, permanent opponents, playing Texas, single elimination in the SEC tournament. Either of you guys want to break that stuff down?
Yeah, I can talk about that.
Okay.
So the SEC is now 16 teams. That hasn't been a surprise for anybody following any college sports because we're coming up on, I guess, the home stretch of basketball now, right? Got through football already. But yeah, Texas and Oklahoma should be interesting additions to the conference. The Hogs will see the Longhorns, not the Sooners. Although, we know that both Texas and Oklahoma were in the 22 College World Series, right? And everybody was making a big deal of like, oh, six SEC teams. Anyway, should be fun to get a weekend series with Texas on the slate this year. Always a good rivalry, particularly in baseball. And then yeah, the SEC tournament will be a different format this year. All 16 teams will qualify. So you don't have the misery of or the dishonor, whatever you want to call it, of being one of two teams not in, not to qualify for Hoover. And I think that kind of bodes well for Arkansas too. It never seems to be a big deal, that tournament, particularly since they won it in 2021. It's like, just get a few extra reps in that week. So the fact that they can lose once and go home, rest up, I think is probably a good thing for Arkansas. I don't know if I'm breaking that down too closely or not, but I
No,
guess take on it.
that's good. That's good. We were talking last night about the SEC tournament and how it's probably just not even worth the trip at all anymore. If you're covering Arkansas or if you're an Arkansas fan, probably even.
If you want a week of good baseball, that's what you're gonna get. But if your goal is to cover or watch Arkansas for a week, I wouldn't count on that.
Yeah, it is fun. Let's get into the preseason polls so far. Arkansas, in the only poll that really matters, D1 baseball, ranked number 5 preseason. I think that's pretty fair. The first poll that came out was Perfect Game, which had Arkansas at 13. And to I don't know if discredit is the right word here, but to add some context to the Perfect Game having Arkansas at 13, they also had Gabe Gackel as a preseason first team All-American as a relief pitcher. And I mean, I think we can all agree that Gackel probably going to start on Friday nights. And then they also had Landon Beidelschies as a first team All-American as a starting pitcher. And we don't even know if we can pencil him in as a starter at this point. So, Baseball America had him at 4. So there you go. That's what you got there. A lot of SEC teams in every single top 10. The SEC is just going to be a freaking gauntlet again this year. Gabe Gackel, Perfect Game, first team preseason All-American. We mentioned that. He's a second team preseason All-American from D1 baseball, and Baseball American named him the preseason SEC Pitcher of the Year. Reactions to that, folks?
Look, I don't want to be a hater or anything, and I'm not. Gabe Gackel was amazing as a freshman a year ago, but to go from freshman closer to now you're the preseason pitcher of the year, that is a big jump. And just playing devil's advocate, I'm not sure. It's just a big jump, and that's a question mark for me. As it would be for any team with, a player going or making that big of a jump, that big of a transition. I think he can do it. He's certainly got the stuff to do it. I mean, he's a super talented guy, but preseason SEC Pitcher of the Year, I'm still waiting to see some more before I can kind of agree with that.
Yeah, I mean, like Riley said, it's going to be a big jump for sure. It's you gotta evaluate, consider the number of innings that he threw, right? You look at it, last year Gabe Gackel had 42 and two thirds, which honestly is a lot. The only guys ahead of him, in no particular order here, Hagen Smith, Will McIntyre, Brady Tigert, Mason Molina. So that's three starters. Or if you want to argue McIntyre was a starter too. I mean, he had the workload, certainly heavy for a freshman. But for context, his 42 and two thirds are barely half of what Ace Hagen Smith threw at 84. So, it will definitely be a jump.
One thing, if you want to talk about Gackel, over the summer he got to pitch with Team USA, so that's an experience he had. DVH, talked very much about how important that was for Gackel and how that's going to help him in the future. Somebody else who got to do that recently, a guy named Hagen Smith, who you just mentioned, Robert. So hopefully that you hope that that helps and provides the type of support that it gave Hagen for Gabe.
Yeah, it's good company to be in, no doubt.
Yeah. We talked about Zach Root. He is a Perfect Game second team preseason All-American. D1 baseball had him as a third team preseason All-American. I was looking at D1 baseball's draft prospects for 2025. The only Arkansas player in the top 25, can either of you guess it?
For 2025.
Yep, D1 baseball top draft prospects from the SEC. I should have clarified that. Just from the SEC, top 25 draft prospects for the 2025 draft. Which Arkansas player is the only one in the top 25?
Is it a pitcher or position player? Or you're not
I'm
going to
not
give us
gonna
that one.
give that away.
Wait, is Aloy 2025?
Yes.
Viva Aloy.
He was going to be my guess, yeah.
Yes. Okay, that's who it is. He's at number 8. But then the next, you got to scroll all the way down to number 30 to get to Zach Root as the next Razorback, which is pretty surprising. Christian Fouch is there. Bidal Shease, Gage Wood, Brent Iredale, all kind of close to that as well. So, Zach Root is a guy. I'm going to be honest, guys. I'm just going to be honest here. I haven't really seen it from him where he's blown me away yet. I do think that he's talented. I think he's got, he's got the tools. He's got the pitches. If you like, he's got everything he needs. But I haven't seen it to where it's like, yeah, this guy was the best pitcher in the transfer portal, no doubt.
Here's something I want to ask you, and it's probably not a fair comparison because I haven't watched Root throw and I don't know how he stacks up to Mason Molina, but I bring those two guys up together because Molina was the impact transfer from a starting pitching perspective last year. You figure it's going to be Zach Root this year. How do you think he can be as effective or more so than Mason Molina? Certainly, the national honors would indicate that he could.
I think definitely more so. I think his ceiling is higher than Mason Molina's for sure. But I go back to the fall man, and he appeared 5 times and gave up 8 earned runs on 14 hits. Like that 14 hits was a team high. Nobody else got hit more than Zach Root in the fall.
How long did those outings go, generally?
Let's see. He appeared 5 times. 4 starts and he threw 6 1/3 total.
Yeah, so those numbers aren't great. So it may be an adjustment to deal with SEC hitting, right?
And his numbers, like
Carolina,
Riley,
what conference?
I don't know if either one of you have his numbers pulled up from East Carolina last year. I should have his story I wrote on and pulled up. But his numbers from last year, again, like what, this is not like the roast or flame Zach Root, session. This is just talking in general. His numbers don't blow you away, but he was also hurt last year. So you got to have that context as well. He was hurt last year at East Carolina, had a little bit of an arm issue. As far as we know, he's healthy. He's kind of got a funny delivery as far as like when he winds up, he looks a little bit different. One thing to note about Zach Root, though, he's a left-hander wearing number 33. And I asked Dave Van Horn in the fall if that was intentional. And he basically said yes. So that lets me know what they think of Zach Root.
Yeah, I mean that's a pretty big shoes to fill after Hagen Smith, right? Who's like
Hagen Smith and Nick Schmidt, I mean, two left-handers, your two best pitchers in program history, not named Kevin Cobbs, probably. And they were left-handers who wore number 33. So
that's
just to.
as again good company to be in. Quick glance at Root stats at ECU last year. Worth noting that he was the losing pitcher in both games against Evansville, which was the 4 seed that won their regional
I think he
in
was
Philadelphia,
also
right?
the losing pitcher in a game against Wichita State. I think he kind of got shelled against Wichita State.
I see him being 6-2 on the year and his only
He
two losses came. He did
get shelled against Wichita State. He gave up 9 hits, 6 earned runs, but actually walked away with the win somehow.
Wow. Okay.
Did walk away with the win. That's true.
Okay. Let's move it along here though, and Riley, I want you to break down this guy. I want you to break down Landon Bidal-Shease for us, the transfer from Ohio State. A really interesting get. He was the Friday night guy for Ohio State last year. Comes to Arkansas and he committed after Root, if I'm recalling this correct. And it was kind of weird because you had Gackle, you had Root, you had Wood, and then Bidal-Shease decides to commit. And talk us through that.
Yeah, so I mean, we all know Matt Hobbs can reel in pitchers, and it helps whenever you have a guy like Hagen Smith walk away and get drafted super high. So I'm sure any big time transfer will look at Arkansas and be like, "Oh, I want to be the next Hagen Smith." And but after they got Zach Root with, like you said, Gabe Gackle returning, I didn't really think they'd be able to get another big time arm, and I kept hearing, They might get another one. Landon Beidelcheese is one of the best arms still out there. And I think he was a top five transfer portal pickup at the time. He was an ace at Ohio State. I think he had a four, I don't know the exact stat line, but like a 4.15 ERA in the Big 12, which, isn't bad by any means, but it's not amazing either. And so him coming here, can he make a jump, going to the SEC, like Mason brought up, kind of don't know right now with Zach Root coming from, I believe, the AAC. But as far as what he brings to the table, he's a higher velo guy. He can pump it up a little bit. Bigger dude, I want to say 6'3". And on a recent Hogs Plus show, I think he said he's getting up to 240 now. So definitely a bigger dude, has the juice, can bring the energy. If a player like that, who was an ace in the Big 12, is a relief pitcher for you, not necessarily a guaranteed starter, I think that only speaks volumes for the depth of the pitching staff. And that's kind of something I want to talk about. A lot of people say the Arkansas pitching staff is one of the best in the country. That's kind of yet to be seen in terms of star power. I think it's probably just a little bit more deep. You do have some very talented guys. You have some freshmen we haven't even talked about yet. And you have a guy like Gackle who, preseason SEC pitcher of the year. But I just think it's deeper, more depth, and Beidelcheese only adds to that. So I think he's going to be relied upon heavily. Will he start? Will he be more of a reliever? Don't know that yet.
I don't see one more thing about him. He actually threw two thirds more of an inning than Hagen Smith last year. So he definitely has the longevity.
Okay, good note there, Robert. So we talked about those three of Gackle, Root, and Beidelcheese as far as the starting pitchers, expected to be in the mix for the rotation. I think the other name you want to talk about is Gage Wood. 22 appearances last year as a sophomore. He did make three starts. Those were later in the season, and he had such a weird season last year because it was like it was a weird start, and then at one point it felt like they didn't trust him at all, and like it felt like as soon as we felt like they didn't trust Gage Wood at all and he might not even throw again this year, then they were like, we're going to make him a starter actually. That's kind of how it felt. And so now you look at Gage Wood, and every time he's gone on the mound that I've seen in the fall and in the preseason, I mean, we know that Gage Wood likes to have a swagger about him on the mound, but it's been a little bit more than even usual, and this is just for scrimmages. Like he looks confident, and so that's what I'm seeing from Gage Wood. We got a note, folks. Gage Wood no longer wearing number 45. He is wearing number 14 this year. So go ahead and get that ready in your head, because when you see him wearing number 14, you're gonna be like, "What the heck? Who's number 14? Does Gage Wood have a brother?" No, it's Gage Wood.
Yeah, 14, it'll definitely look weird, right? After having seen Gage Wood wearing 45 for the past couple of seasons. But, like you said, confident, that's great. I love to hear that. He should be, right? After 2 years of SEC experience, he's definitely one of the more veteran guys on the staff now. So, you want to see, somebody who could be your most important arm, exude that kind of confidence and lead by example.
Okay.
Just really quickly, a quick note on Gage Wood. I know Mason, you kind of talked about how weird of a season he had last year. Finished with the 4.46 ERA, but struck out 56 guys with only 8 walks. So, kind of weird. And also another note today, in Arkansas scrimmage, he went 4 innings, had only 1 hit, 1 walk, and 3 strikeouts. So,
Wow.
pretty good.
4 innings already. Okay. They're getting him ready. I guess, I mean, opening day is less than 2 weeks away. Okay.
Yeah, this is February 1st when we're recording right now, 13 days away.
Yes. Okay. Before we move on to some more of the pitching staff, let's remind everybody about hogbeat.com, HAWGBEAT.com, the Rivals website covering the Arkansas Razorbacks. As I mentioned earlier, I'm the publisher. Riley is the managing editor. Robert is a former writer for hogbeat.com. And we do a lot of great stuff over there. We have a lot of fun, a lot of free content on top of our premium content just for our subscribers. It is less than $10 a month, actually, if you do the yearly subscription. If you are a Razorback fan and if you are an Arkansas baseball fan, I really do believe it is worth your money because you're going to be getting top-notch coverage when it comes to Arkansas baseball. I say this year in and year out, I truly don't think it gets better than us at hogbeat.com. So check us out, give us a shot. Even if you just want to try it out for a month, or if you just want to try it out for a day, shoot me an email or whatever, DM me. I still check my Twitter every once in a while, so I'll get you hooked up and we'll get you set up on hogbeat.com. So check it out, hogbeat.com is where you need to go. All right, talking more about this pitching staff, let's go a little bit quicker, guys. We went through some of the starters, some other options to start this year, or some names that maybe you want to look at that could get into the starting rotation or could be a midweek starter. Obviously, Colin Fisher, who was a midweek starter last year as a freshman, had the Tommy John surgery. Or no, he had the internal brace surgery, excuse me. Colin Fisher had the internal brace surgery because I got pissed at everybody last year about that. He should be good to go, but we'll see on that one. The big name that everybody's excited about is Aiden Jimenez. That's what I'm going to say. I'm going to say Jimenez. Everybody's been saying Jimenez, but I think they call him Jimmy. So, or maybe they spell it Jimmy and pronounce it Hemi. That's also possible. I'm going to go with Jimenez, though, the transfer from Oregon State. Go ahead, Robert.
One thing that has remained consistent over 5 years of the Diamond Hogs podcast is that we are not exquisite pronouncers of names. So apologies. Some things just never change.
I'm always embarrassed about this Sonny Dechiara thing, dude. We
Yeah,
didn't know it was
that was a really
Sonny.
tough look.
Okay. Anyways, Aiden Jimenez, dude. This guy was—he was going to be in the starting rotation for Oregon State last year. Had Tommy John surgery. Had a solid freshman year for them a couple years ago. This is a guy who's going to be a redshirt sophomore this year. 6'3", 215. He's been working back. It's been less than a year since he had Tommy John, and he's been pitching in scrimmages and looking good. When he can get up to 95, from what I've read in the scrimmage, he was 93 topping out from what I saw on his fastball. But this is a guy that you really want to keep an eye on him, and I think that he could be big for Arkansas this year.
Does it strike you as a kind of guy who could start? Because you have to take past seasons with a grain of salt. But I'm looking at his Oregon State game log, and he's got 22 games, 22 appearances with only one start.
Well, I don't know if you might have missed it, but he was supposed to be a starter last year at Oregon State.
Gotcha.
And DVH loves to tell you that. DVH definitely loves to tell you that. So that lets me know that they're, maybe considering him for that. So that's a
Definitely.
name to watch. Carson Wiggins, younger brother of Jackson, he went to he topped out at 101 in the fall. So this is a guy that he's got some juice. But
Good
he
beans, too.
hit the last outing that I saw him, he was working the changeup a ton. He barely threw the fastball, so he's definitely working on his stuff. So that's a name to watch for a starter as well. Ben Bibee, we know of him. He's going into his senior season or junior season, excuse me. Ben Bibee's only a junior. Christian Fauch, what a class that was. Christian Fauch is a guy to watch for the closer position. Another freshman who I think could actually be a solid option for the midweek starters, Cole Gibler, out of Blue Springs, Missouri. You want to talk about pitchers who were impressive in the fall? I don't know if there was one who was more impressive than Cole Gibler. 6'2", 205, lefty pitcher. I mean, let me pull up his stats here because he was impressive. Yeah, 5 appearances, 4 starts. Gave up 2 earned runs on 3 hits across 7 2/3 innings, 14 strikeouts, 5 walks. So he faced 28 total batters, and he had 14 strikeouts. So
Casual 50% rate. No worries. That sounds pretty good.
yeah.
I do have a quick note on Gibler, who actually pitched today. This is kind of unfortunate with all the positivity you're bringing. He only got one out, and in that time had one strikeout, 3 walks, 5 earned runs, and 2 hits. So
Well, you know what,
just a
Riley?
note.
Why don't you go back and look and see how Hagen Smith looked
I
on
hate to be the
opening day
bearer of
last
bad
year?
news.
Go see how Hagen Smith looked in his first outing last year.
Yeah, didn't he give up a home run in like the first inning or something like that?
Was
What was it?
bad. It
Sure
was like
did.
39 pitches in the first inning, I think, if I recall correctly. Now we're gonna do this. Robert's pulling up his scorebooks. I can see
Yeah,
it. I
I've
know what
got
he's doing.
Hagen Smith went one inning against James Madison, walk, hit by pitch, home run, first three batters.
Wow.
And then
Final
walked another guy
line.
later in the first inning.
Final line on 2024 SEC Pitcher of the Year, Hagen Smith against James Madison. One inning pitched, one hit, three earned runs, two walks, two strikeouts, 42 pitches.
42 pitches in the first inning is pretty crazy. But
Well, no, did they bring him out for the second at all?
no. Will
No.
McIntyre went 5 2/3.
Shout out McIntyre, dude. Gage Wood closed it.
Here's a quick note. We were talking about Hagen Smith just now and purple teams that won the last two Fayetteville regionals earlier. Hagen Smith in the last two seasons registered four decisions as losses, and two of them came against said purple teams in Fayetteville regionals.
Yeah, that sucks. That sucks, man.
Anyway, moving on.
Yeah.
Arkansas will get to see both purple teams in Arlington this year. That's
They
a
will.
non-conference note that we didn't bring up earlier, but those are definitely, I think, the non-conference games of the year to watch.
All right. Let's keep it going here with these pitchers because there's so many names. It's such a deep pitching staff. Parker Coyle, who's a junior, lefty, we know about him. Seems to be the king of summer ball. Let's see if he can piece it together during a real season. You know, he had his moments last year, but never really, you know, became a dude, per se. Will McIntyre back for his sixth season. Is this finally the year that Will McIntyre wins the Golden Spikes, guys? Now, Kevin Cobbs, if he follows the Kevin Cobbs route, I mean, the only issue, and I've said it before, I'll say it again, the only issue, he's from Bryant. The only issue with Will McIntyre is he's from Bryant, Arkansas. But Big Mac back for his sixth season. I'm excited to see him again. Similar to Zach Root, Will McIntyre didn't look that great in the fall. But Robert, is it just me, or has it seemed like Will McIntyre's never been good in scrimmages?
You just gotta take his gritty performances in season as the mark of who he is as a player, I think.
He's a gamer. I think we can say Will McIntyre's a gamer.
What if I
Absolutely.
told you guys that Will McIntyre had a good scrimmage performance today? Would you believe me?
Dude, did
Because
everybody throw in the scrimmage today or something?
Will McIntyre did pitch. He pitched two innings. He gave up one hit but had five strikeouts. No
Wow.
runs, no walks. So
Good for Will.
I think he was pitching against the non-starting group, but I mean, still a pretty impressive performance for Will McIntyre.
Okay. You know, still going down this line of names, and it's just like name after name, dude. Hunter Dietz, who Dave Van Horn has said time and time again that Hunter Dietz is going to be a big pitcher for this baseball team. He's just got to get healthy. He hasn't been healthy since he got to Fayetteville. So he's a redshirt freshman, redshirted last year. Or no, he threw twice last year. How's he a redshirt? He didn't. I know what they're doing. They're doing this thing. Are they doing this thing where they mess with the roster? Or am I being stupid?
What do you mean? Well, how do they mess with the roster?
You know how with Will McIntyre, they used to have his year and it wasn't exactly what it was supposed to be, but it looked better to scouts?
I don't know if I remember that detail.
Okay. Anyways, maybe he got a medical redshirt because they're saying he redshirted, but he made two appearances. Am I missing like a new rule or something?
I don't think so. I mean, it's hard to keep up with all the new rulings, but I mean, medical, if it was going to be a redshirt, medical would make the most sense.
Okay. Anyways, not an extremely important detail, but keep an eye on him. Lefty out of Trinity, Florida. Dylan Carter, another guy back for his sixth season. Dave Van Horn said at a Swatters Club last year that Dylan Carter was touching 98 in bullpens. We haven't seen that. But we have seen Dylan Carter getting up to 95 in scrimmages. He's looked all right. But the thing about Dylan Carter has always been he just kind of gives up the big hits, right, Robert? I feel like that's always been his Achilles heel.
He could get tagged at times, and it was his contributions before he got hurt in 23 were so valuable. Like, they needed all those innings, and I feel like that team really just collapsed because of all the injuries to pitchers that year. But you know, the fact that it was a UCL thing. Did he have Tommy John after that injury or?
He did have Tommy John,
Okay.
yes.
But yeah, the fact that he was able to pitch it all last year was great, I thought.
Yep.
And if he's touching 98, you know, if he can command the ball a little bit better, then you figure he should be a pretty critical piece, especially having, you know, parts of 2 years of SEC experience under his belt.
And you know, Dylan Carter is the ultimate Razorback. The if you want to root for anybody on this baseball team, he's the guy. He is as true of a hog as it comes. Homegrown kid from Bentonville, went up to Crowder College, got it done, and then came to Arkansas, and he's poured out his blood, sweat, and tears for this team. We've seen it for years. So,
Former producer Christian, if you're listening, go ahead and take your victory lap because he was
yes.
his guy.
Producer Christian was the first person I ever heard saying that Dylan Carter was going to be good. And so credit to him for calling that one. Another name to keep an eye on, Tate McGuire, had an incredible summer in the Cape Cod League. Now, I was having a conversation with somebody recently about Tate McGuire, and I kind of view Tate McGuire as a 2022 Austin Ledbetter type. That's what I view his role for this year's team. I'm not, and I don't mean that in a bad way whatsoever. And I can't remember who the person compared him to, but it was somebody who is way more productive than 2022 Austin Ledbetter. So what are we thinking about Tate McGuire this year?
Well, here's the thing about 2022 Austin Ledbetter that I remember. He had a 0 ERA in Omaha.
Yep. How many pitchers can say they have a 0 ERA at the College World Series? Not many.
You know, it feels like the trend recently, broken up only in the back-to-back runs of 18 and 19, is that every third year the Hawks go to Omaha, right? 2009, 2012, 2015, 2018. And then now we're on a path that's like 2019, 22, 25.
Potentially. I
So
feel like we're dragging on here.
okay,
Sorry to
well
interrupt you.
it's shaping up for Tate McGuire to have a 0 ERA in Omaha this year. That's my point.
Okay. All
That's
right.
my thoughts on him.
That's your bold prediction for the season. Okay. Let's go ahead and fire off some names here real quick before we transition to the position players. Okay. Who am I missing? Luke Williams, freshman out of Owosso, Oklahoma. He's a lefty. May or may not see him. He's been all right. Lance Davis is a name to watch, freshman out of Valley View in Jonesboro. A lot of the sites like him. I want to say I was looking at the 2026 draft rankings from D1 Baseball, and they had Lance Davis on it, or maybe it was Impact Freshman, which was crazy. Yeah, Impact Freshman, D1 Baseball, and the SEC has Lance Davis at number 25. That one was kind of confusing, but they must hear something from the coaching staff that we haven't yet. Let's see. Ross Felder out of Harbor High School in Springdale. He's thrown a little bit. Tag Andrews out of Maumelle. He's thrown a little bit. Haven't seen this Jackson Farrell kid, I think, out of Jenks, Oklahoma. I haven't seen him. Cooper Dossett is going to redshirt this year, as far as I understand. He had Tommy John. I believe it was Tommy John. And then who am I missing here? Did I get everybody? I think we hit all of them.
Did you mention Steel Eaves
Steele Eaves
from
is one.
Roanoke?
Dude, Steele Eaves, I get more questions about him than anybody. The freshman out of Lone Oak, so keep an eye on Steele Eaves as well. There we go. All right.
Has Arkansas
Reminder.
had a loan out guy since Casey Martin?
Not that I know of. I don't think so.
Maybe he'll be as good as Casey Martin then.
Maybe so. Okay, let's move on to the position players because we're kind of running really long here on time. So let's go ahead and just go through who we think is going to start. Let's just do it that way. So catcher Ryder Helfrich for sure. If Ryder Helfrich gets hurt, I really am worried about this team. Just to no offense to the other catchers, but Ryder Helfrich is the bona fide starter. After him, you're probably looking at freshman Zane Becker out of Flower Mound, Texas, 5'11", 200. He's been all right, but he doesn't blow me away. Elliot Peterson, JUCO transfer. Riley knows all about him. Tell us about Elliot Peterson behind the play, Riley.
Yeah, Elliot Peterson was the, I believe, JUCO batting average leader. Kind of a fairly sneaky but impressive pickup for Arkansas in the offseason. You know, I never thought that it would be anybody else but Ryder Helfrich, but still a good pickup, good depth option. He just hasn't really that those JUCO numbers just really haven't translated yet. Again, it's scrimmage, it's preseason, but yeah, I definitely think he's more of a third base, or sorry, third option behind Zane Becker and Ryder Helfrich.
What was his average? He hit over 500, didn't he?
Yeah, no, he hit over 500. It was high. I can look it up really quickly.
It's not that important, but
Nothing to sneeze at. But you
oh,
know,
now we see Riley's shirt. Look at it.
the thing
It's got
about
pet hair on it.
I
I'm
was talking
sorry.
about his dog earlier.
All right,
The
go
thing
ahead.
about Ryder Helfrich, you know, he was one of four catchers on the roster last year, made some important contributions, including a big home run against Auburn. Still true this year, one of four catchers on the roster, but the only guy with D1 experience. So, like you said, Mason, they're going to need to lean pretty heavily on him, I feel like.
If you go through the roster and the catchers they've had on the roster for like the past 5 years, it's like they've been a year off on just the overall talent. Like you go back, you had Opitz and Leach. I broke this down at one point. Then you go Turner and Leach, and then you go Roland, Polk, and then last year you go Roland, Polk,
Hudson
Helfrich,
White.
and Hudson White. And this year, now you're just Ryder Helfrich, and you could use a guy like a Parker Rowland or a Hudson Polk. But that's the catcher position. First base is still working itself out. The names we're looking at there, Rocco Pepi, the transfer from Fresno State. He's got some sneaky power, folks. I saw him go down and get a pitch a couple days ago. Just didn't it looked low effort and just snuck it over the fence in left field. It was pretty impressive. Redshirt senior, 5'10", 195.
That's the thing that stands out to me is 3 years of D1 experience already. Two at
Yeah.
Long Beach State, which is historically a pretty good program, and then last year at Fresno State.
He's a dirt bag, Rocco Pepi, former
He
dirt
is.
bag. Let's see here. What else? Oh, Kendall Diggs is another name we're watching at first base. We know of Kendall Diggs by now, friend of the podcast. So DVH is basically explained it like we know that Kendall can play in the outfield, so we're trying other stuff out. And people who are worried about the injury, Kendall tore his labrum last year. It was in his non-throwing arm, so you don't really need to be worried about that too much as far as him in the field. So they're looking at him. Obviously, we know he can play outfield. They're looking at him at first, and then DH is another option for Kendall Diggs. The other first base option is Michael Anderson. Right, the transfer from Rhode Island, I think he was from. I don't have a ton to say about him. He's a big guy. He's 6'3", 230. I just haven't seen a ton of him to talk a ton about him. Am I missing somebody else at first base?
Does Big Country factor into the infield equation at all?
I mean, if he's gonna play, he would be an infielder. But I love Rhys Robinette, but I just don't think he's gonna cut it, at
Yeah,
least at this point in time.
he'll always have that pinch hit home run in Baton Rouge to beat LSU in a game that Paul Skeens started.
I'll
So.
never forget that. We'll never forget that from Rhys Robinette. But he, I mean, I'm not out on Rhys Robinette yet. It's just he hasn't been moving in the right direction as of late from what I've seen. But I'm not out on him. Second base, we talked about it earlier. Souza is your guy with Kojal as your backup, basically. Shortstop, Vejeva Aloy, that's who it is. Who are we looking at a backup shortstop, folks?
I mean, if Souza's not a full-time second baseman, you can slide him over to short, I feel like, right?
Souza's an option.
How
Who
about
has
Gabe
been
Frazier?
Gabe Frazier? That's right. I was trying to think of who has been playing. You know, Gabe Frazier, interestingly, they've been playing him in the outfield because he's had an arm injury, and he had some bad plays in the outfield the other day, like just dropped a ball and then missed a ball at the fence, and you could tell he couldn't throw. And I asked Dave about it because he did that in one half inning, and then the next half inning he hits a home run. Off of Jimenez, and Jimenez struck out the rest of the batters, but Frazier hit a home run off him, and DVH was like, "Yeah, he's never played outfield in his life. He just can't throw, so we put him out there." And so that's why that's a funny story on Gabe Frazier.
Is that a little Hunter Grimes-esque, maybe?
Yeah, but I guess Grimes was had Grimes played in the outfield before? I don't know.
I just know that he didn't look good when he played the outfield. But
Okay.
you know, that double play outfield assist he had against A&M a couple years ago,
Yeah.
that always sticks out.
Gabe Frazier, freshman, 6'2", 190 out of Huntington Beach, California, for those interested. Third base, Brent Iredale. Brent Iredale is going to be the guy this year that we talk about a lot in the preseason, and we've told you about him, and he was incredible in the fall. He shouldn't have made it to campus. He should have been drafted. He should be on a pro roster right now. He's 6'3", 200. He's out of Australia, was at New Mexico Junior College last year. Just, he has all the tools. He can field, he can run, he can hit for power, and he can just do it all, folks. But
For those of you who have been tuned out for most of the offseason, like me, this is like the one name you know and probably should be excited about.
as we know, the one name you should have known for the past 2 years, Caleb Cowley and Vahevo Aloy, both got off to slow starts with the Arkansas Razorbacks. So let's all just give Brent Iredale a couple weeks. How about that?
Yeah, Callie was absolutely a name that came to mind when you start talking about Iredale, so. Yeah, look for him to be a late season bloomer, or maybe not bloomer, but he'll thrive the most come the more important games, I would think.
And if you're curious, yes, he does have an Australian accent. And it's
Very good.
awesome. It's wonderful. All right, moving on to the outfield. So we mentioned Maxwell and Davalan or Davalon. Logan Maxwell, the transfer from TCU. You know, he's played in this ballpark. He knows the team a little bit. This is a guy who's athletic. He can hit. Dave Van Horn said he can flat out hit. So
And you look at his numbers over 3 years at TCU, they've gotten better consistently year over year. Last year, slash 335, 447, 482. That's almost 1,000 OPS, right? 25 RBI, 10 stolen bases, 30 walks, all career highs. Again, stolen bases, Vahevo Aloy, your 2024 leader was 7. Maxwell with 10, Davalon, I believe, had 13. Yeah. And then one key stat that stands out to me about Maxwell is that he had 85 more plate appearances in 23 or in 2024 than he did the year before. He struck out the same number of times, 23.
Riley, you might know this off the top of your head. Did Davalon lead the country in doubles last year? I think he did. At
That was actually a different transfer that Arkansas had committed at one point and then left to go to Kentucky. His name escapes me, but that dude is the one that
Oh,
led the country in doubles. Yeah.
dang. Okay. Well,
Unfortunately.
Davalon.
Davalon did have a bunch of extra base hits, though. 44% of his hits last year at Florida Gulf Coast were extra bases.
This is a guy who is he's very athletic, transfer from Florida Gulf Coast. He was a freshman last year, so he's still young. And another international prospect. He's originally from Canada, so he's a Frenchie, Robert. He can speak French. You
That's
can speak
right.
French,
If
right?
I were still covering him, maybe and my French knowledge were still closer to me, then maybe I could interview him in a different language. That'd be cool.
Yeah, that would be cool. Who else? Justin Thomas Jr., the JUCO transfer. Worth noting that the team that he played for, I think it's Florida Southwest. Colin Smith, former Razorback, is on the coaching staff there. So Justin Thomas Jr., very athletic guy. He played for Georgia. So a transfer from Georgia to JUCO. Now he's at Arkansas. He can hit. He's very athletic. I just haven't seen a ton from him. Like I haven't seen anything that makes me feel like he's a bona fide starter. We talked about Diggs. He's another option in the outfield. Kuhio Aloy, the brother of Vahevo. We haven't talked about him yet. Committed transfer from BYU. You know, interestingly enough, when he first committed and I talked to him, he said that Arkansas also was recruiting him to pitch a little bit. I don't think that's going to happen anymore, but it seems like that was part of the recruiting pitch. He's got a big bat. Like him and his brother, they can hit. I don't exactly know what he looks like in the outfield. I personally have not seen him play in the outfield. I know he has this preseason so far, at least one time. I've seen him play at first a little bit. I just they're still working that out, so I don't have any answers yet.
Yeah, he hardly played any defense at BYU last year, just 4 games at first base. Otherwise, they're primary DH. But, anybody who watched early season broadcasts for Razorback games last year knows Kuio Aloy's name because everybody just went on and on about how he was starting hotter than his brother. If he can do that again, then you gotta be pretty excited about having two Alois on the squad.
Yeah. All right. Anybody else that we
I
should
was
talk
gonna
about?
bring up, Mason, another name, Brendan Clark. What's he looking like so
Yes.
far?
Brenton Clark, so the freshman, you want to talk about, we mentioned Cole Gibler, as impressive as any pitcher in the fall. Brenton Clark for a little bit there was as impressive as anybody at the plate in the fall. Freshman out of Texarkana, Texas. He played at Pleasant Grove High School. He had one scrimmage where he was a triple shy of the cycle. He had a couple. I know he had at least one 2-home run day. He was just really impressive. He was hitting off of everybody. It wasn't just, hitting off the scrubs or maybe the guys who aren't on the roster anymore because they went to JUCO ball. He was hitting against everybody. And at one point, I can't remember if it was the Fall Classic or one of the maybe the first game against Oklahoma State, the exhibitions. He was with the team that was stacked with the starters. So that was notable. Because DVH doesn't, just do that just to do it. Like he's very intentional with that type of stuff. So that was notable. He's a name to watch. Yeah, good one there, Riley. I'm gonna scroll down through here, see if there's anybody else we're missing. And it's nothing against anybody if we don't mention your name. For all
Another
the players that we
outfielder,
know that listen. Go ahead.
another out potential outfielder. I'm not totally sure where they might play him. Carson Bowles, who, speaking about, leading the country in batting average, I believe he was the Division II batting average leader. I'm not super sure how he fits into the team or the rotation anywhere, but it doesn't hurt to have a guy who has shown a propensity to hit. So you have another one in Carson Bowles.
So what you're seeing here is a little bit of more depth as far as like, if guys aren't getting it done, maybe they have some more options. I know that, baseball's a sport where you want to have consistency. It's a lot better to just know your name's going to be in the lineup every day. But I do feel like as far as depth goes, they've got more, maybe just as far as the talent perspective goes. Like in the outfield, they've got legit five or six options. In the infield, at first base, you're still working that out. Catcher, we talked about, but Reese Robinette could play third base a little bit. We know that Nolan Souza's there. Cam Kojal, you got plenty of options. And some of these guys who transferred and were listed as outfielders can also play some infield as well. So we all know that once the season starts, injuries happen, crazy stuff happens. We're gonna see some weird stuff this year, but I think that they got a talented roster. As far as transfer class rankings, they were up there in all of them. Their freshman class wasn't as highly ranked on Perfect Game. I want to say it was like 17 or 18 nationally. But what they did was they got freshmen to campus that normally they might not have in the past. Like Carson Wiggins is a guy like that. Cole Gibler as well. So I'm just excited, guys. This is gonna be a fun thing. There's a lot of new faces, but it's also good to have guys back that we're familiar with.
A lot of new faces. I meant to lead with this when we started talking about position players, but there are only four Razorbacks from 2024 who are on this 2025 team as far as position players go, right? Ryder Helfrich, Kendall Diggs, Nolan Souza, and who's the one I'm missing? Viva Loy, sorry. Anyway, so those four, right, accounted for 32% of the 2024 team's at bats. So it's going to be a different year, a fun year nonetheless. It's February now. Baseball season is upon us. Especially if you are like me and not super jazzed about the Super Bowl. Sorry, Mason. I feel like I'm with the majority of Americans on this one.
Hey, don't get Riley started. He's gonna start crying on the podcast again, like he always does. I'm just messing with you, Riley. I'm just messing with you. Okay, what was I gonna say? Frick, you started talking about the Super Bowl, and then I had to make a joke about Riley, and now we're here. Thanks a
Sorry.
lot. Okay, let's look at this schedule a little bit. So, opening day is February 14th. They're opening against Washington State, 4-game series. I'm excited about this. That first weekend they're doing a schedule magnet giveaway, baseball beanie giveaway, Bark at the Park, which I got a dog for anybody who cares, and I'm super excited to take her to Bark at the Park. And
She's
then
a cute
Kids Run
dog.
the
I've seen her.
Bases. Do what?
She's a cute dog. I've seen her.
Yes. And then we get to go to Arlington again. And then fast forwarding, The SEC slate is just a gauntlet, guys. I mean, you just look at these SEC teams. You start at Ole Miss, then you host South Carolina, which is going to be loaded. Ethan Petrie's back. Then you go at Vandy. Then you host Mizzou. Thank goodness. Don't have to play on a turf field. Then you go at Georgia, which Vandy has a turf field. Then you host A&M at Florida. Then the ending is just fireworks, guys. Texas at LSU, Tennessee. Can you think of a better ending to the season? It's just from a competitive perspective, assuming all those teams are good at that point.
That's just going to be magnificent stuff. Are you kidding me? That's beautiful. And both orange teams will be in Fayetteville, yeah, at the box for the LSU series. But hosting Texas and Tennessee is going to be incredible. My hope as of right now is to make it to Fayetteville for that Longhorn series. We'll see if it comes to fruition. But one more thing about the schedule we forgot to note: permanent opponents. We probably talked about this in the past couple seasons, but Ole Miss and Missouri are the two teams Arkansas is going to see every year. Not gonna lie, I kind of hate that. Ole Miss, you should play every year, of course. No divisions. But Missouri, no. I mean, who wants to play Missouri twice? I guess
Dude,
the only positive is that it should be 3 wins every year.
how many times have I ranted on this program about Missouri's baseball program not being even real? Like, they don't even care. It should be a situation like, isn't Gonzaga like in the Pac-12 in some sports, but in like the WCC for basketball or something?
Might be.
We need
I don't.
a. We need to send. We need to like. Is it relegation that they do in soccer?
Yes, there should be relegation. I like that.
We
Instead
need
of
to.
two teams who don't get to go to the SEC tournament, two baseball programs are relegated from the conference if they finish 15th and 16th.
To the Sun Belt. Is that
Sure.
fair?
Sure.
Okay.
Or are given to the Big 12 if it's important for them to play bigger schools, I guess. I don't know.
The Sun Belt's a good baseball conference. It's not a
It
bad
is.
baseball conference.
It is.
Yeah, that's annoying. Mizzou, I hate them.
It's a bummer that you don't get LSU or Texas. Like, those would be two great every year teams to play, but
Yeah.
alas.
Yeah. So, but the SEC this year, guys, I mean, Tennessee's freaking loaded. LSU's loaded. We know A&M returned a lot of their players. Texas, Schloss went down there and just got a ton of freaking dudes. Auburn spent a lot of money in NIL in the portal. Florida, Kevin O'Sullivan's always really good. It never gets easier in the SEC. Wes Johnson's at Georgia now.
Yeah.
And Vandy, I mean, Vandy's just a consistent machine as well. So there's a lot to look forward to this season. We're excited to have everybody with us. Anything else we should get here on this first episode, guys? We kind of, I know how these first episodes are. It's a lot of information at you. It really is. And we got a lot of information we got to talk about, but we're less than 2 weeks away from live games. It is kind of like annoying that opening day falls on Valentine's Day as a married man. And Robert, you're in a relationship now too, so.
On the other hand, how can you not be romantic about baseball?
Yeah, that's a great point. That is a great point. Before we end, should we go ahead and narrow it down to like three Moneyball guys? Just to give the people something to think about as well.
All you. I'm going to
Okay.
stay for this discussion, but I'll hear what you got.
Let's look at the top on base percentages from the fall. So number one was Rocco Pepi, but like he was kind of hurt, didn't play a lot. Brent Iredale. Can't pick him. He's not a Moneyball type guy. Brenton Clarke, nope, not gonna play enough. Ryder Helfrich, nope. I think we gotta go between Davalon, because he's probably gonna hit leadoff. Davalon, Maxwell, and Riley, you pick the third for me.
Well, Logan Maxwell was going to be my contribution because I
Okay.
believe he struck out fewer times than he walked last
I would
season.
say
So.
Souza, but he swings out of his shoes every time, man. Diggs used to be a pretty big OBP guy, didn't he? His first year, maybe? Did he have a decent OBP?
Think he did. I think it
No,
was.
it was his second year. No, it was...
I
Go
think it was
ahead,
one
I'm
of those
sorry.
situations like Zach Gregory where who was the original Moneyball guy, right? A situation where like his average wasn't awesome, but his OBP was very good. Walks, hit by pitches, things of that type.
Yeah, I'm pulling it up here. In 23, Diggs hit 299. This was when he led the team with 63 RBI. And he also had a 4.36 OBP because he walked 46 times and struck out 47 times.
Did Kendall Diggs have like 10 RBIs in a weekend against Mississippi State that year? Am I making that up?
Probably. Did he get how many times did he get hit by a pitch? Six. Dang, Jace Borfin got hit by 16 pitches in 2023.
Ball magnet.
Oh man. Okay, so I think let's go Diggs. Is that Diggs, Maxwell, and Davalon? Okay.
I think the
Those.
only other choice could be like Rocco Pepi.
Yeah. Okay. I'm cool with Diggs, Maxwell, and Davalon. That's what we're gonna go with. I'm probably leaning Davalon because he's probably gonna be lead off.
I agree.
Is Riley, do you remember this or not? You haven't been to a ton of the scrimmages, but which one of Maxwell and Davalon is it that like loves to mess around in the plate and kind of like Juan Soto-ish? I wanted to talk to Robert about this. I want to
Oh,
say it's Davalon.
yeah, I was gonna say I don't remember that being Maxwell. I think Davalon is more of that kind of, he brings the energy, so that kind of makes sense for him.
All right, Davalon's got my vote. Hopefully, we'll have this Moneyball guy thing ironed out by Arlington when I see him in person for the first time.
Okay. Well, tell your friends that the Diamond Hawks podcast is back for season number five. We're excited. As always, we love doing this and we really appreciate all the loyal listeners who've been with us the whole time and who want to continue to listen. So, reminder, one episode a week this season, that's what we're going to be doing. No YouTube, so wherever you get your audio version of podcast, Spotify, Apple, Amazon, all that good stuff. You can find us there. So just type in Hog Beat Radio Network and you will find the Diamond Hawks podcast. So thank you for listening and we will talk to you next week.
You've been listening to the Diamond Hogs podcast. Follow the guys on Twitter at Choate Mason and at DRStu32.